And a cheerful good morning to everyone. This is Roy Porter in the NBC newsroom in New York, and you might as well forget about making any long-distance telephone calls for some time to come. Negotiations have collapsed on both sides, and the strike is on for some time. We'll hear all about it from Washington in a few moments, and then drop in on some of our overseas reporters whose stories are not too hopeful either. That's the way we're ending the week. So after a word from your announcer, I'll be back with your World News Roundup.
Young women 17 to 35 years old, are you looking for an interesting career with good pay and the chance to do some really worthwhile work? Then investigate the opportunities open to you in the field of nursing. Nursing is the best preparation you can get for homemaking, motherhood, and leadership in community life. There is a continually growing demand for trained graduate nurses, and the opportunities are many and varied. The current trend toward the expansion of hospitals and clinics will mean even better chances for you in the years to come. So remember, a 3-year training period will prepare you for a satisfying lifetime career. Check with your nearest hospital or school of nursing today. They'll be glad to help you make plans for starting your career as a student nurse. Now back to the World News Roundup.
We're settling down for a long strike. Those are the words of the telephone union. After negotiations on both sides collapsed at midnight, and there's little hope of anything positive developing over the weekend. The protest strike in New Jersey has grown by 5,000 more maintenance men who have been told by their lawyer that the anti-strike law is unconstitutional, even though 3 of the lady operators have been arrested as guinea pigs in the first test case. Soft coal production is back to about 60% of normal, but there's a complaint running around Washington that the federal mine inspection regulations are slowing down the back-to-work movement. Everything is just about ready to call the first special session of the United States General Assembly to discuss the Palestine question at Great Britain's request. The tentative date is April 28th, and invitations are expected to go out today. Special memorial services are to be held at Hyde Park today on the 2nd anniversary of President Roosevelt's death, and Mr. Truman, who will be in Kansas City, will participate in nationwide broadcasts. And the Greek Civil War continues in the Pindus Mountains areas northwest of Athens. Now, for the last time this week, let's get the roundup on strike news from Leif Eade in Washington.
This morning, the hottest story in town is the Cherry Blossom Festival. Midnight passed and the telephone talks expired with a sad sob. Union President Joe Byrne says, "We're settling down for a long strike." John Moran of the Long Distance Union says, "We'll just have to stand by and see what happens now." And George Dring, who's been doing the public talking for AT&T, Big Bell, says, "I suppose we'll have to start all over again." You can see for yourself how things are. Neither side has the foggiest notion how to get started again, and they're both looking expectantly at Uncle Sam's hired hands to come up with a fresh idea. There's some fitful talk among government men that President Truman might seize the telephone system under wartime powers written into the Communications Act. But the White House crowd doesn't seem to think much of that idea either. Probably the strength or weakness of the picket lines over the weekend will supply fresh inspiration for one side or the other to settle up next week. The Bell people are calling the back-to-work agreement with 1,800 telephone maintenance men in New York State the first break in the strike. On the coal situation, it's the operators who have sharp words for Cap Krug this morning. John Battle of the National Coal Association says government rules for inspecting closed mines are arbitrary and unreasonable. He says government men are inspecting the worst mines first instead of looking over the mines that can qualify for quick operation, and that's holding us back from near-normal coal production. Yesterday, production was nearly 60% normal, with 250 mines opening up. Since early in the week, John L. Lewis, like Brer Fox, lay low and say nothing. But today is Saturday, and John may summon us for a statement. A final note on labor. This morning, the House Labor Committee meets to vote an okay on that bill that has more teeth than a man-eating shark. And 250 CIO leaders are in town to plan the battle strategy against. Otherwise, this morning, President Truman, rounding out his second year in the White House today, is hopping off in the sacred cow just about now for a Missouri visit with his ailing mother. He'll give his Roosevelt Memorial broadcast today from Kansas City. And the cherry blossoms are lovely. It looks like a nice day for the thousands of out-of-towners here to see them and the magnolia trees. The theme this year is world peace. But make no mistake, those are not Japanese cherry blossoms. They're still oriental flowering cherry trees. Peace, it's wonderful. This is Leif Eade in Washington.
The all-out Greek government offensive against the guerrilla bands in the Pindus Mountains is a supreme effort to improve order inside the embattled country, which we propose to aid substantially. For the story, here's John Donovan in Cairo.
Reports from Athens claim great successes in the anti-guerrilla campaigns in central and northern Greece. Greek army communiques have always exaggerated the extent of their victories and minimized their losses. But clearly, it is not going well for the guerrillas now. Greek general staff sources say that they have between 150 and 200 rebels surrounded in central Greece, but add morosely that four gaps exist in the encirclement, so the rebels may get away. The mountainous terrain of Greece is ideal for guerrilla warfare. During the long war years, the guerrillas baffled the German army with hit-and-run warfare. Without surprise, the Greek rebels won't have much striking force, but it's going to be awfully difficult for the Greek army to capture the rebels. Athens Radio reports that William Donovan, presumed to be the ex-OSS chief, has been sent by the Security Council to Geneva. Radio Athens says that Donovan is being sent to investigate Greek charges that members of the United Nations Secretariat are showing prejudice against the Greek case. The United Nations Investigation Commission to Greece is now drawing up their report in Geneva on the findings of the Greek frontier inspection. The Greek liaison officer, Alexis Kirou, is said to have complained about the anti-Greek attitude of the United Nations press attaché, Stanley Ryan, and others. I am in no position to appraise Kirou's complaint, but I do know that this man publishes an alarmist right-wing newspaper in Athens called Embros. Frequently invalid charges have appeared in Embros. It is said solely because of the extremist viewpoint of Mr. Kirou. Unfortunately, unless you agree completely with this type of Greek rightist, you are labeled as an anarcho-communist. In Cairo, I beg goodbye to the Turing Congressional Party, Senators Barkley, Brewster, and others, and they said they'd make no statements in either Ankara or Athens. This is John Donovan in Cairo.
Heard much from the United Kingdom lately, so for the latest news from Britain, let's take a quick hop over to Merrill Muller in London.
Another trade union congress, this making the third, will voice attacks against the Labour government's foreign policy and its military conscription issue. It was announced today. The Scottish Trade Union Congress, which opens at St. Andrews on April 23rd, will debate three resolutions announced this morning. One attacks the new American foreign policy. Others attack the foreign, military, and domestic policies of the Attlee Labour government. The resolution regarding America holds that President Truman's aid to Greece and Turkey has nothing in common with the principles of the United Nations and should not be supported by Britain. The resolution against Foreign Minister Bevan's affairs states that continued British political and military support to the present Greek government is endangering the interests of peace. The third resolution against the call-up plan for the military forces attacks the Labour cabinet's distribution of manpower and demands the recall of all the armed forces in non-enemy countries. These are more irritations now to be considered by the Labour cabinet when it meets with the Labour Party Congress at Margate next month to repair the unanimity of the Labour Party. Meanwhile, thousands of Scotsmen in colorful kilts, tammers, and scarves took London by storm today and added some brightness and life for the National English-Scottish Soccer Championship being played this afternoon. Henry Wallace, America's off spokesman, is up in Manchester making another one of his utopian speeches. His press play on his speech last night was disappointing today. There's another great day of sporting sunshine here today, and it's made Britain forget her troubles, even though they now include resumption of flood damage from collapsed temporary repairs. Meanwhile, the British government this morning refused a $60 million relief aid request from Yugoslavia and advised Yugoslavia that due to Britain's own problems, the Yugoslav relief matter should be presented to the International Emergency Food Council. This follows the line of the American refusal to Marshal Tito for relief last month. This is Merrill Muller in London.
Today ends the fifth week of the Big Four conference in Moscow, but still no absolute agreement on any of the terms of a peace treaty for Germany. The debate, however, continues. So come in, Henry Cassidy in Moscow.
Russian deputy Andrei Vyshinsky put on a brilliant display of wit and public speaking this afternoon in the first Soviet news conference of the Moscow Council of Foreign Ministers, but he neglected to tell us much news. The performance was largely a repetition of the act he has been putting on with the ministers for 5 weeks. The high spot was a long tirade on reparations. Vyshinsky got red in the face, he waved his arms, and he told us Germany must pay. And in this connection, he made a very significant disclosure that Secretary of State Marshall has the Russians puzzled about his policy on reparations. Vyshinsky said the latest American proposal was a positive result for the Russians since it concedes their right to take some reparations from current German production. If Mr. Marshall admits that, Vyshinsky said, even with reservations, he admits what we have been fighting for. But as to whether Russia would accept the plan as a basis for discussion, he said, I can't add to that because I would only be guessing as to what Mr. Marshall has in mind in addition to what he says. Vyshinsky indicated a fervent wish to know more from the secretary. Vyshinsky reiterated that the $10 billion demanded by Russia would compensate her only for a small part of the damage she suffered during the war, and he repeated that reparations were connected with the problems of economic unity and a higher level of industry, in effect maintaining the position that Germany cannot be unified until Russia is guaranteed payment. As for the overall prospects of the conference, he said we could tell better because it was easier to see from the outside. But if progress was to be made, that depended on all the participants. He pointed out the meeting was not yet over, and much remained to be done. In reply to a loaded question as to why the reparations plan so far had failed, he said it was working well in the Soviet zone of Germany, and as for the Western zone, as an old lawyer, he would prefer to hear the words of the defendants themselves. This is Henry Cassidy in Moscow.
Merrill Muller told you that Henry Wallace is up in Manchester, England today. He's making a speech, and he says that the United States has embarked on a program of ruthless imperialism, declaring that the program must fail because Americans will never pay the cost, and they cannot pay the cost. In an attack on President Truman's proposals for aid to Greece and Turkey, Wallace said that America's present program, if unchecked, would stretch the American empire from China to the Near East and from pole to pole. This position of ruthless imperialism is the position which all groups blinded by hatred of Russia must ultimately defend, the former vice president declared. And then he added, it may cost little to divide the world, but to keep the world divided is beyond the resources of any nation. There's more news. I'll be back in a moment. Now, here's your announcer.
Just about everybody puts on a few extra pounds of weight during the winter months. Right now, probably you housewives are all busy cooking the things that the family loves to eat. And the more cooking you do, the more used fats you have left over. So don't forget, those used cooking fats and oils are still desperately needed to eliminate the shortage of soap and hurry the production of other goods, such as paint, floor coverings, textiles, and cellophane, that you want and need. Now, it may be many months before our imports of fats and oils from South America and the East Indies return to their pre-war level. And in the meantime, it's important that you help out by saving every drop of used fat. It's not much trouble. Keep an empty tin can handy near your kitchen stove, and you'll find that it fills up in a hurry, and you'll get cash for every pound of used fat that you turn into your meat dealer. So help out, won't you? Do what you can to salvage this important material, used kitchen fat. Now back to Roy Porter in the NBC newsroom.
The threat of renewal of civil war in Venezuela has again brought extraordinary powers to the government, and President Romulo Betancourt has been granted authority to suspend constitutional guarantees for the security of the state. And Copenhagen reports this morning that the condition of King Christian of Denmark, who suffered a heart attack on Easter, is improving. Well, I'm asking the ladies along the network this morning if they'd like to buy Pop a very special present for Father's Day. It's a super deluxe shaving brush with a gold handle and the finest bristles, and a firm over in Newark, New Jersey, says it only costs, with the tax, mind you, $3,350. And that's your World News Roundup for this morning and this week. I'll be back with you on Monday, so until then, this is Roy Porter wishing you a very pleasant weekend from the NBC Newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.